First of all, certainly there is a far, far better situation than it was. But have we gone to the other side? No, certainly not. I think we require another effort. A second effort would get us there. Because today, yes, there are many, many faculty across the country who are working with industry. And there are many, many industry across the country who are working with the academia. But I will not say that it has reached, and there are a large number of entrepreneurs, of course, very large number of entrepreneurs, even in deep tech. But I think one more push.
Hi, wherever you're listening to this, I hope you're doing well. Welcome to Startup Fridays, conversations with accomplished entrepreneurs and VC investors. I'm Hari Arakli, and in this episode, Ashok Jhunjhunwala, Institute Professor at the Indian Institute of Technology Madras and President of the IITM Research Park Incubation Cell and RTBI, talks about why the next big push is needed now for India to become a nation of deep tech products over the next decade. He also asks that administrators and bureaucrats change their control mindset to allow our scientists, engineers, and entrepreneurs to fail without fear so that they can eventually succeed in building this ecosystem for India. You are, of course, very well known in India, and your work is well known world over among scientists and engineers. So I won't ask you for a lengthy introduction, but I was curious about why you decided to come back to India in 81, I think. Maybe you could start there.
That was way back in 1981. That was more than 50 years back. Well, the primary reason was that I wanted to do something for India. I wanted to change India. I couldn't, after studying in IIT Kanpur, getting the confidence, then I went abroad and I saw the wealth there. I saw much more, organized society. And I was wondering often that why we in India do not have something like this. And my clear objective was that I would like to see a different India, at least an India where poverty is not there. And I think that was a major, major concern. I'm not talking about other aspects, but in terms of poverty and inequality was very strongly there in India. And I, India was kind of often called a poor country and underdeveloped country. So I wanted to see that I contribute to the country. That was the primary reason.
I'm just wondering whether historically that kind of gives us a clue in terms of why we are where we are today in terms of our technology development or lack of technology development in certain critical areas. I'm just wondering, looking back, what's your assessment of, why we are where we are today in the sense that we missed out on several technology waves?
Since you started on history, I may go back to that point. I had earlier thought that one should get into politics to change the country. And very soon after I came here, within about a year, I would say less than that, 6 to 8 months, I actually went around the country, met a lot of people, saw a lot of things. And clearly, politics was not my cup of tea. So I knew that I am unfit for politics. So I kind of sort of say that's not the way things are. And I was a little bit lost in terms of where and how can one change the country. So it is at this point of time, I also spent a lot of time with a number of my friends trying to understand a bit more about history of India and how we got into this state. How did we get into a dysfunctional state? I mean, a very simple thing. I wanted a telephone at my home and it took me 8 years to get a telephone. I wanted to buy a two-wheeler and I decided to buy a Bajaj Chetak only to be told that there is a 4-year waiting list for buying a scooter. So I actually could not understand why this is a situation. And it's here when we started looking at our history, looking at, we discovered something totally new, something that we at least were not familiar with, that till around 18th century, India was a very functional society. It was doing quite well. The knowledge and technology basically was in the villages. The villages were centers. Basically, what Gandhiji had often written and we didn't understand fully when we looked at history till around 18th century, it was a very functional society. There were problems, but it was a functional society. Probably it is today said that it was one of the wealthiest country in the world. Now, from there to 20th century, things had gone wrong. And it is here that we needed to see where have we lost things. And again, I had no clue where to begin. Even the history did not give me enough things that how can one change that. And that's a time somewhere I discovered that if you entrepreneurship can really make a difference, if you can somehow encourage entrepreneurship and get entrepreneurship, particularly technology-led entrepreneurship, to flourish, it could change India. And that's where I started, sort of said, well, I can build my strength on technology and I can encourage entrepreneurship. Somehow the two together has kind of spanned my last 40, 45 years career.
Yeah, before asking you about the research park, and of course, definitely want to cover a lot of that in this conversation. You were instrumental in multiple projects last several decades, and one of the best known, of course, is the CARDECT initiative. Today, what is the future that you see for that technology in the context of, you know, IoT and all of that?
So let me start with that, because that was, in fact, telecom was my area, and since I did not get a telephone for 8 years, actually pushed for that. What we really discovered is that it took us several years, but we discovered the primary reason why we cannot get telephone on demand is the economic reason. Basically, a telephone used to cost 40,000 rupees per line. So somebody had to invest 40,000 rupees to give us a telephone. Now, we calculated that they need to get a telephone bill of approximately 1,200 rupees per month or 15,000 rupees a year for them to break even. And most of us, even my own salary was just about 1,200 rupees. So there's no question. I mean, one could spend 3-5% on communication. One cannot spend more than that. So we started looking at it and we back calculated. And we sort of said that if we can bring down the cost of telephony from 40,000 rupees per line to 10,000 rupees per line, then maybe 100 million people in India can afford it. And then maybe the market can grow and we can do even better. And this was the primary. So we said we have to change technology such that the cost can come down to 10,000 rupees per line. And we studied every aspect of telecom network, the backbone network, the long distance network, the switches. A lot of work was going on in many areas. But it is the local loop, from the exchange, a pair of copper wire buried underground coming to my home, that was very expensive. By 1991-92, that cost was 25,000 rupees. And the cost of copper was not going to go down. Cost of digging was not going to go down. So we were a little bit stuck. What do you do? And that's where we came to the idea that the only alternative is somehow we make it wireless. Now, at around that time, wireless was extremely expensive. And one could not even imagine that one can build a wireless solution and bring the overall cost per line to 10,000 rupees per 10,000 rupees. That looked impossible. But we realized that copper we cannot do. Copper cost will only go down. Wireless is electronics and software. We knew that software cost is a one-time cost and we can actually do a lot of things. Electronics cost is driven by Moore's law, where every 18 months the cost goes by, down by a factor of half. So we sort of say in 3 to 4 years' time, 5 years' time, we will be able to substantially bring down the cost. And we, along with a bunch of youngsters, declared that we will make telephone wireless in local loop, bring telephone to homes and offices at 10,000 rupees per line. That is what Cordic was. And since we are doing digital, we sort of say we will not just bring telephone, but bring telephone and internet. This is what we did between 94 and 96. And I think that's got us started. Of course, there was a lot of opposition, a lot of things we didn't understand. But finally, we are able to develop the technology, make it successful. And what happened was that for 4 to 5 years, there was a strong opposition to that within the country. And I'll say the opposition came unfortunately from, of course, competitors who didn't want us to win with that kind of technology, the large multinationals, but also our political process. We just never understood this, never could really handle something like that. So for almost 3 to 4 years, we were pushed back. And only around 2000, we were able to start deploying it in a wide scale. And by that time, we are also recognizing that in the last 4 to 5 years, we are starting to fall behind. So it took us a lot of effort after that. And I'm glad to tell you that we continued the work. For last 20 years, we continued the work. We actually involved much more. We started involving other IITs, scientists around the country. And today, we are one of the 4 or 5 places from which 5G wireless is coming from. You have probably heard of a company called Tejas Network. Tejas Network was a company formed, I was one of the founder of the company and on the board for almost 10, 12, 13 years. And what we did is that most of the people who were working with us on wireless actually went into the company. And we also created a 5G consortium across IITs. Together, we were able to create the 5G 4G and 5G solutions. And we have now patents, and we are one of the few countries which have the base station and the switches for 5G. The only other companies which have this is Nokia and Ericsson, and we have Huawei and Samsung. I don't even know there are too many others who have it, but Tejas, along with TCS, is now deploying 5G wireless. And we actually have a bunch of patent in 5G. And we are today, I will say, in wireless amongst the leaders in the world. Of course, a lot of this was done over the last 10 years. And I have not played active role in that. It was my colleagues who were working with me who came to the front, who are the fully wireless person. I started the whole thing. We created the consortium. We helped create Tejas. But finally, I stepped back almost 10 years back in that. I moved on to other areas. I moved on to the other areas like computer networking and networking. We played a major role. But and internet. But I think the other areas that I moved in is banking. And this happened from 2004 onwards. I was on Prime Minister's Scientific Advisory Committee, and the Prime Minister at that time kind of told me that he knew of me, my work in wireless, and he said that I want you to go to the board of State Bank of India. I was quite surprised. He said, it's a board of a bank? I know nothing about banking. He says, you learn. Don't worry. I told him, sir, but I'm a technology person. What technology will bank need? He says, you will figure it out. I'm telling you, please go to the board. And I went to State Bank of India board and I became the chairman of the technology committee. And that's where we started doing a lot of things. Of course, the banking, the computer networking of the banking, all of that, we are able to do that fairly quickly. But the major thing that emerged at that time was the mobile payments. So there were a bunch of youngsters around the country, different companies, they were all working on mobile payment. Remember that time we had barely 2G mobile phones, which you couldn't even download the programs into that easily. So that's a time we started it. And when we started working on it, we said that our aim is to do mobile-to-mobile payment from any bank to any bank and for a phone belonging to any service provider to any service provider. And we say we want to be able to transfer 25 rupees. And it looked absolutely impossible. We formed a forum called Mobile Payment Forum of India, 2007, as far as I remember, or 6 or 7. And I was made the first chairman. And we brought together the banks, we brought together technologists, young technologists, and we brought together telecom operators. And we started working together. And for a long time, it was a dream. And finally, today, in UPI, we are the leaders in the world.
This forum was like the precursor of the team that put together UPI, is it?
Yeah, we in fact, this was the forum which wrote the initial protocols, and then we formed NPCI. RBI was a part of the RBI people were part of this forum. We formed NPCI, and then the UPI base was created, and then it took some time. It took 8 to 10 years. Today, the dream has been realized, and India is a leader in that area. And I think a lot of people have played. I think Nandan has played a major role. Of course, number of people in NPCI has played a major role. But we got there.
Okay. I'm going to switch to the idea that you mentioned about how entrepreneurship, and especially in technology and deep technologies, entrepreneurship could, you know, be game changers for the nation. Can you talk a bit about the research park? I mean, of course, the research park is very well known, and this year is the 15th year, is it? And since you started it, and of course, you built it over 2 phases, can you give us a sense of, you know, the kind of impact that the research park has had?
So, I think the primary reason, sometime by the time we are doing, number one, our wireless work, computer networking work, and then banking work, I found 2 things. That first of all, our youngsters are very, very good. If challenged, they can do impossible. And I'm not talking about our young graduates from IITs alone. I'm talking about young graduates from very large number of colleges. We largely worked with engineering. There are 1 million engineering students. And my belief is about at least half of them are very good. Not that they are ready. They are, when they graduate from college, they are not ready. Most of them are not ready. But they are good. And you motivate them and they can do wonders. So this was one of the things that we had learned over 20 years. Second, we realized that, for example, at IIT Madras, we had absolutely top quality faculty members. And if they work with these youngsters, again, some important things can happen. And a third was when our experiment with Midas and later on other companies came up, is that when we bring the industry person to IIT in this ecosystem where they were youngsters and faculty member, this industry person knows how to take a product to commercialization. Whereas if I just leave it to academia, they had no clue how to take things to commercialization. And if the youngster, of course, would not know that. Youngsters' primary role would be that they will work very hard. So we often use the term that the faculty members had the width of the knowledge and they were extremely good and they knew what was happening in every area. The industry person knew how to convert a prototype to a commercial product. And the youngster did not know that it cannot be done. If you take an established person, a person who is experienced person, and you take very wild idea to them, they say, well, not possible. They'll very soon give up. They will not even start. Whereas the young person, young graduate, 23-year-old, 22-year-old, 24-year-old, does not know that it cannot be done. And you motivate them and they will go all out. And I think we needed to bring these 3 sets of people together. And while we could do at IIT 2 of them, you know, youngsters and the faculty, we could not bring this industry person. And the whole idea of Research Park was born in 1998. And we came up with the idea that if I can build a park adjacent to IIT Madras, where we can get faculty and these youngsters and this industry person together, that's where large number of different technology can flourish. Now, from 1998 till 2008, the idea, the early idea became a firm idea, ability to, number one, get land next to IIT. That itself was a very, very marvelous. I mean, for a long time, we were trying to look for a land. We did not want to do it as a part of IIT because we knew that there was a constraint. Industry people who were advising me told me that if you ask us to come to the educational institute, well, we will not do that because we need our own ecosystem. So on the other hand, we needed it not far from IIT because otherwise, again, we can't bring the academia and the youngsters also there. So we needed adjacent to IIT. And first of all, how does one get land? We approached, of course, the state government. And by and large, we were told that there is no such land. I happened to meet Chief Secretary sometime in 2005 or 6. I don't remember the dates. And one on a flight one day and basically gave him the idea. He liked the idea. He says, let me see. At least I can take you to the Chief Minister. And one day suddenly he called me and I says, come over. Chief Minister is have a 10-minute slot in at 12:45. So if you can come, I can get you audience. And I went there. And Jayalalitha was the Chief Minister. I spoke to her. It took only 5 minutes. And she was absolutely convinced. She said, this looks very like a very good idea. Why can't we find him a land? And her staff told him that there is no land. They said, bring the map. And they did bring the map. And there was a Jayalalitha film city, a film city named after her. She just immediately put her finger to that. He says, what is going on out here? I don't think anything is going on. Why can't he just needs about 10 acres of land? Why can't we give him a land there? And that was it. And we started. The unfortunate part was when the paperwork for handing over the land was going on, she lost the election. The election was there in about 2-3 months and it took us a longer time. And though the file had moved to almost to the top, but the land was not handed over. And what I was told after that if the file from the previous Chief Minister goes to the new one, we will not get it. So I sort of was a little bit helpless. I said, what does one do? But by now, I had several friends in the secretary at the IS officer, several of them, the Chief Secretary and others. So they said, we'll figure out a way. And they figured out that there is a new file they will create, not referencing to this file. And once again, moved to the new Chief Minister that this land should be given. And we got the land. Now, we got the land basically on a revenue share basis. Very, very good. So Tamil Nadu government. And they said, of course, 3 of our secretaries will sit on your board. We said, sure. And then the question came that, okay, where do we get the funds from, initial funds? I was advised that this should be a self-sustaining enterprise. It should never be supported fully by either government or some industry or something like that. You must make it like a startup. So this advice came from multiple people, including Piyush Goyal, who was with me in State Bank of India, with Vinod Rai, who was the ex-CAG, and several other people who sort of told that take minimal. And we finally decided to only take seed money. Fortunately, the government of India at that time, I think Kapil Sibal was there. I'd gone to him and he agreed to provide seed money. And then we borrowed the rest of the money from bank. And from day one, we are very clear. Either it will succeed or fold up. It will not be an enterprise which will keep getting money from either government or industry and survive. It has to either succeed and make its own money or die. That was the genesis of IIT Madras Research Park. We finally built it and got going.
Yeah, I recently came across this anecdote about how you borrowed something to the tune of 400 crores and that you repaid every rupee.
Yeah, we paid about 600 crores. Well, yeah. We borrowed in bits and pieces. We did not borrow in one lot. So, I mean, total borrowing. We have spent about 400 crores. So, I may have borrowed about 325 crores. And we paid the whole thing with the interest. And we make cash profit today.
Today, how many companies have established their R&D centers there? And how many centers? I think more than 100 companies.
About 150 companies are there. Close to 150. Between 125 and 150 companies have established their R&D. Plus, we have our own startups. We have 300 startups. So, another 150 startups are there. So, we have close to 275 to 300 companies in the research park.
Okay. Can you give us a couple of examples of some very well-known multinationals who have their centers and talk about a little bit about the kind of work that they do there?
So the large companies are companies like Saint-Gobain. It has its biggest R&D center outside Europe at our place. We have Pfizer as another company, very big center. There are a number of other players. The work that they do, so the right from beginning, what we said that this is not a real estate place. You can't come and set up your centers and do whatever you want. For every 10,000 square feet of area that you built up area that you actually occupy, you need to earn 1,500 research credits from IIT every year. Now, what are these research credits? Basically, we do, when you jointly work with IIT, all kinds of work, any kind of work will give you research credits. So we sort of say you have to get the research credits. If you fail to get the research credits, we'll ask you to leave. And I think that is what got things going. If you did not put, and some of the smart companies, what they did do is that they make their leadership in that place, their variable salary dependent on their getting the research credits. And so we have created kind of a compulsion. So you must work together. Otherwise, in the beginning, industry and academia never did not work together. They did not trust each other. They initially kept, I mean, early industry used to tell us, oh, academia only wants money and they will only publish paper. They will never do anything which can go to the market. And academia will sort of say, well, industry will like to import every technology and really never use local technology and never give us money. They will give money to outside the country. They will never give to us. So this was the conversations of 80s and 90s, and I would say even early part of this century, the decade of 2000. So we had to overcome that. And that, I mean, this continues to be so. I will say, I'm not saying that we have overcome this completely, but I think we have gone far. Now there, at least there is a trust in Research Park, IIT Madras Research Park.
And there are some 275, 300 startups. So through the this research credits sort of impulsion incentive, what's a good way of illustrating the impact that has had? I mean, would you look at the number of patents that have come out here? What's a good way of showing?
I don't think the patents and other things are necessarily the best. Sometimes, of course, things result into patents. Sometimes things result into just product. And, also the industry, academia, research work, what it does is that it never comes into a, that itself will not necessarily give you the full product. But very often what it will do is it will play a very critical role in getting the product ready for the market. So some critical pieces of work gets done. The other pieces of work are a little more routine, a little more known. The industry itself knows how to do it. It has its own knowledge and they are able to do. So finally, what happens, it starts benefiting both for the established industry and for the, of course, incubated companies. The complete product is developed and deployed. That is going on. I mean, finally, they have to make money. Our 350 companies that we have, the collective valuation of all these companies are close to 45,000 crore rupees. That's how they, and they the only reason their valuation comes is that they are successful in the market. And almost all companies are deep tech companies. See, we don't have many e-commerce. Hardly, I don't even remember if there is any e-commerce company. That's not what is encouraged. We want deep tech company, which really can make a difference.
So in that context, and since we've been talking about industry, academia, collaborations, in the broader sense, there always used to be this general sense that in India, academics did not want to get their hands dirty with doing business. And you have, of course, in the past, you have given the example of how they did not want to mix Saraswati and Lakshmi. Sort of at the national level, as a nation of scientists and engineers and inventors, not just innovators, do you see that changing significantly today?
Slowly. Very slow. I think the next push is required. I'm not seeing the next push. But I think, first of all, certainly there is a far, far better situation than it was. But have we gone to the other side? No, certainly not. I think we require another effort. A second effort would get us there. Because today, yes, there are many, many faculty across the country who are working with industry. And there are many, many industry across the country who are working with the academia. But I will not say that it has reached, and there are a large number of entrepreneurs, of course, very large number of entrepreneurs, even in deep tech. But I think one more push for another decade will take us to the same state as most of the, I mean, today this is happening in, whether you call it in China, United States, Europe, Japan, these kind of things happen easily. Korea, this still we haven't reached that level. I think our potential is that, so we need to push. So it will come from both dimensions. One is startups working with academia, startups emerging from in university, and another is industry working with it. I think both will happen. It will happen, probably it will take 20, 25 years to reach on par with the rest of the world. But I think if we do a push, we can do it in 10 years' time.
So in your assessment and in your view, what might be the most sort of critical engines of this next decadal push?
You know, today I'm a little concerned about that my comments may be taken as somewhat critical of something. You know, today the Make in India, for example, has made an impact in terms of actually getting manufacturing in India. But manufacturing in India that we have got has very, very low value addition. For example, we make large number of mobile phones. That's a good thing that we are making it. Value addition is low. Now, how do you really get it to the much larger value addition where really it makes a difference to the country, where very large number of people are employed? I think that requires all the way from design, development, design of each subsystems, components, testing machines. All these things has to be done. For example, you go to some of the very, very top companies like Foxconn, which is making a large number of phones in India, doing a great thing in India. But every machine is imported. Why are they all imported? And even the design of these phones largely come from outside. China, from Korea, from Taiwan. Why can't it be Indian design? The components are imported. Why can't it be Indian components? Now, that is the push required. For that, another effort is required. Saying that we will make all these things in India. So far, what we have done that we can win in 50-100 areas, small 50-100 areas. We have done that. Our incubators are doing that. Some of the established companies are doing that. But can we go whole hog and at least become a serious player? We should be on par in technology with the United States and China. That's what we need to do. And we have that talent. I am repeatedly pointing out we have the talent. Our youngsters are very good. But we need this different dimension. And hopefully we will be able to start doing that. We'll require that push. One more leap, I will say.
So in order to kind of really focus on our strengths, as you know, today, there's again one more effort to try to catch up in the area of semiconductors?
I would say not catch up. I mean, I would say take leadership. Whichever area we touch, I think we should be amongst the leaders.
Yeah, I was just going to ask you, sir, what within semiconductors, in order to look at our strengths, what should we be focusing on? Because there is obviously, today it looks like there is political will to try to get a foundry, a fabrication unit in India and so on. Is that what we should do? Or should we be looking at designed in India semiconductors? In your view, what should we focus on?
So it is not, probably India is the large enough country where you cannot do this or that. So see, design part, we are actually already very competent. We are in India, I'm not even saying outside India, doing the designs for most leading companies in the world. Whether it is, for example, TI or Analog Devices, or any company, if you see their design, significant part is done in India. Can we further enhance that? Yes. You don't see Indian companies, the design company. Even if the fabrication is done, so I think we should separate out the fabrication and the design. Basically, the ones which are doing product ownership. For example, Tech TI. TI owns the products, the integrated circuits. Fabrication can be done anywhere. Similarly, Qualcomm owns the design product. Fabrication can be done anywhere. Fabrication and the design does not have to be together. So today, while we are doing designs for Qualcomm and for TI, for Analog Devices, for all these companies, we are not the owning the design and owning the product which goes all over the world. So that's number one. Even leaving fab aside, the ownership of the product, which has to be sold in millions. The integrated circuit has to be sold in millions. And that is not getting done in India. That will happen. You know, that will happen in the next 5-10 years. A push will help do it faster, but that will happen. The second part is fab. Now, yes, India government is really, really going out saying with the profit-link incentives that we will get in fab. So we will get some fab, which is very good. I'm happy that we will get some fab, but we will get the state-of-art fabs. See, today, for example, the state-of-art fabs are 5 nanometers, 7 nanometers. Even China does not have it. And there is a huge effort to somehow not let China get there. 14 nanometer, probably China, I don't know. 28 certainly it has. 21 nanometer certainly has. Does it have 14 nanometer? I don't know. But there are two views. There are people who say, no, China has 14 nanometer. What about us in India? We will probably get 28 nanometer or 56 nanometer or something like that, which is not a bad thing, which will begin, which is an important beginning that we'll make. But this approach will never get us to become leaders. So the leadership requires something else. It requires a whole lot of technology. Today, the technology that is required for getting to 7 nanometer, 5 nanometer, are actually with a few European companies and some little bit from American companies. But it's quite large number of complex technologies are required. But I think we'll get there. But this is only one of the area. But I'll take you another example. Solar cells. See, with the climate change, I think India has to go all out. Not India, the whole world has to go all out for solar panel, wind, and other, maybe nuclear, micro-nuclear. Now, how do we get leadership in solar? Today, if you look at solar, silicon solar, the complete fabrication of silicon solar from polysilicon, crystals and wafers to solar cell manufacturing is with China. Completely. There is no other player in the world. Silicon, they are the one who, nobody else comes close in competition. And this is very, I'm not making an anti-China statement, but it's very unfortunate that one country dominates the complete. Now, can we break in there? That's the kind of effort that is required. Can we break in at least part of it, even if not on all three? The fourth area is panel manufacturing from cell to panel, which is a relatively routine mechanical assembly, and that is getting done in India. So that, fortunately, we are getting done, and that I will give the government credit. They have helped establish this. The only thing that I will sort of say that today, still the Chinese panels are far, far cheaper, and though they have banned Chinese panels, but they are coming through Malaysia and Vietnam, and somehow government is not really doing enough about that. So that's not very good. But overall, I think the panel manufacturing we have got established, and it's a matter of time before panel we can do. But can we do at least one of these three, either polysilicon or crystals and wafers or solar cells? My feeling is this is the kind of effort that we are ourselves working on, at least breaking into one. Breaking into one, the leadership is no longer with China, but with India, or at least equally with China and India. That's the kind of thing required. Of course, in solar cell, the other option is cadmium telluride, very small in quantity compared to silicon solar cell but panels. But there is only one company in the world, First Solar, which has cadmium telluride. We have brought them to India. So the manufacturing is getting done in India. That's a very good thing. I played a role in getting them out here. But what we need to do is need to do more R&D so that they can keep on improving and compete with silicon solar cell. That work needs to be done in India. I will say the other thing that will happen, since you are talking about semiconductors, is the perovskite. Perovskite will be most likely a layer either above silicon cell solar cells or cadmium telluride solar cells. And yes, that's an area where we need to do really much more. Some R&D work is going on around the country. But again, I'd say that, can we really acquire the leadership? That's the kind of thing that's really required. Sorry, I've given you a very long answer.
No, this was very insightful. And I think what you're attempting to get scientists to contribute to fundamental inventions where India can own the IP. Of course, it will take 10 years, 20 years, but it's pretty clear that we have no other option. Like you said, a company like ASML, even with India now being a signatory to most of these technology regimes, missile technology, whatever, MTCR and many of the others, we still may not get the latest technology from even the Western partners.
Any day, a decision can be taken to deny us. Like the decision has been taken to deny China. Yeah. We cannot be truly independent in situations like this.
Fair enough. I want to ask you about one other area where you continue to play an important role in the context of, again, energy. You've done a lot of work on the battery swapping, and I think you contributed a lot to the initial draft as well. And earlier on in this conversation, you spoke about how political apathy and opposition were among the causes for where we are today. So even the battery swapping idea has taken you 5-6 years to bring it to where it is today. Can you give us a sense of what happened? Because you started this in 2017, 2016 or something like that.
So I did do this, and I was principal advisor to Piyush Goyal. He took me when he was in MNRE and power ministry, and basically told me go all out on the one hand for solar, other hand for the electric vehicles. And in the electric vehicles, we realized that in India, affordability is key. If you remember, even in wireless, in telephony, it is affordability. See, when we brought down the cost from 40,000 to 10,000 rupees per line, India got 100 million telephone. Then we helped bring down the cost from 10,000 rupees per line to 2,000 rupees per line. And we got more than a billion telephone. I think affordability plays a very, very important role. And for electric vehicles also the key thing was affordability. And we figured out that instead of a batteries being the dominant cost, instead of using a large battery, because we're always worried about range and batteries take long time to charge, we said that if we can do a battery swapping and use smaller battery, and we set up battery swapping stations around the country, we will be able to do it, at least to begin with, make it highly affordable. We said that we can actually make the vehicle as inexpensive as IC engine vehicle, petrol vehicle, and battery swapping can be actually done. There was a huge opposition to it. Now, the opposition basically to anything novel, this is something that is there. Even in our wireless, if you remember, what happened is that we came up with wireless and local loop and wireless telephone, and people just didn't accept it. How did we come first? Basically, has it been done anywhere else in the world? This is a question that I was asked in 95, 96. Huh? If anyone else in the world has not done it, why do you think you can do it? We can do it. We cannot do it till somebody else does it. In fact, it was so difficult that we were denied, after giving a particular spectrum for which to build the technology, we are actually allotted that. And we built the technology, and then that spectrum was, we are told that spectrum is not available and we cannot deploy anything in India. And our first deployment actually took place in Madagascar, because we had the technology ready. I mean, we did, of course, the trials here. Trials, there was no problem in Chennai, in Besant Nagar, Hadyar area, where next to IIT, we were allowed to deploy. And that's where we proved the whole thing. But after that, commercially, they said the spectrum is not available. So you cannot do that. And that's the time we were struggling. And we had to actually go to Madagascar. Our partner took us to Madagascar to deploy. That's where our first deployment took place. First deployment in commercial scale took place.
This was for your 5G switch, was it?
No. This was for Codec. I'm talking about 1997.
Okay.
Hmm. Yeah? But basically the question was wireless telephony instead of landline telephony. How can it happen? Nobody else in the world has done it. Why do you think we can do it? I think that was the basic thrust. Same thing happened when we started trying to do mobile telephony. All kinds of obstacles. How can you? We wanted to bring in, use a new technology using MMID. How can you actually do that? Is anyone else in the world doing it? Same thing happened in almost everything. We tried to do ATM for banks. Wagul had kind of challenged me to make an ATM which is very, very low cost. And we had actually done it. We had created a company called Vortex and did that. And again, the same question was asked that how can you, we had used different way of doing things, and how can you do this when nobody else in the world can do it? And same thing happened when I went to electric vehicles and started doing battery swapping. I said, how can you be the first to do it? Who else in the world does it? This is basically, there is no confidence that we can be the leaders. It's a very unfortunate thing. I will say, has it been overcome? I think one after another, certainly the opposition that I faced in wireless, I didn't face it in the next one. We face little less and less, but that problem is there, that there is lack of confidence. In fact, this whole thing that manufacturing in India rather than design in India is also because of lack of confidence among the scientists and technologists and innovators to come up. And of course, even the business leaders don't have the confidence. So generally, and part of the reason is that we haven't contributed, we haven't done that. So the first set of people will face this opposition. So I don't blame anyone. I think we had to do it. When I started a research park and I said, we will build this, there was opposition. How can you actually do this? You'll never be able to do this. In fact, most people, those who did not oppose also did not believe that we can really be financially sustainable. Even some of our board members tell me, we never thought that we can be financially sustainable. But one has to actually do this. It's always technology and business has to work together. That's what I found. Technology alone cannot win. Business alone cannot win. And I think my biggest advantage is that I was able to bring in technology and business together. Partly technology, of course, I learned. My roots came from IIT Kanpur, where I studied, but than anywhere in the world. And then basically I learned at IIT Madras. I learned from my youngsters, learned from my younger faculty members, learned from my students. My students often taught me. They will study in detail and come and teach me. And that's how we'll get the idea. So same thing happened everywhere. And we learned and we were able to do that. But what we faced all the time is how can we be the leader? How can we be the first in India? And today, what I would like to do over the next 10 years, that we can be the first in India, we can be the leader, and we are good, and our youngsters are very good, our technologists are very good, and technology and business has to work together. And that's why my work in energy also, by and large, when I did this DC solution, try to put this solar DC all over the country. Again, it was killed by, while we did deploy a lot, but basically the question was that how can we be the first in the world? The whole world does AC, and how can we do the DC? Today, every appliance that we use only uses DC, does not use AC. And solar gives us DC. The wind power is the easiest in form of DC. In fact, DC transmission lines are also starting to happen. But there is a strong belief, I'll say, in bureaucracy. I won't blame politician as much. Politician follow. Amongst even scientists, even educated people, that we cannot be the leaders. And that has come from colonial period. And I think we have to overcome that.
Okay. In this context, one last area I want to ask you on this conversation. I know I have to let you go soon. There is a worry again that, like historically, there is now this another big wave of technology in the context of artificial intelligence. The worry is that we'll again miss the bus on this if we don't really step up our efforts. What is your view on this?
So, I'm not worried in one way. I'm worried in one way, worried in not, and I'm not worried in more. I'll say both AI, robotics is another area. The reason I'm not worried is because I think our youngsters are very good. If we enable them, they will do things. They will not just catch up, they will do better. We have to enable our youngsters. That's what we have to empower them. And, a question I will tell you, why does a startup succeed? More startups succeed than established R&D organization. Established R&D organization are not able to commercially make their products commercially successful. Very few, limited, with all the money going in to them. Whereas startups very often are able to make their technologies commercially successful. Now, what is the difference? Basically, in India, there is a very strong control mindset. When money comes in, there is a control comes in. And scientists and technologists and youngsters do not flourish with control. So I think academia, scientists and technologists, they are funded, but there is a control that comes. Along with finances, the control comes. And the startups flourish because there is no, so they get funds from somewhere else. They may get small grants from government, but that grants are grants, does not enable control. You have to allow people to fail. Our auditors will never allow any R&D funding that we get from Government of India. Our auditors will ask, we'll finish you up if you fail. But the point is, without failing, you can never succeed. You have to fail. The whole purpose should be that you experiment, fail, get up again, try. That is what the whole science and technology, R&D, that's what the entrepreneurship is about. And we have not created that culture. And unfortunately, that is not changing. In fact, more control is coming up. I think we need to overcome that control And that's our, let's say, biggest problem. And the control comes, those who fund either from industry. Even when industry comes, they say, oh, give us full details, this happened, that happened. They want to manage. Whereas innovators, scientists, technologists are not manageable. They must not be managed. And I think AI is safe. If you allow them, then we can do wonders. You try to control them. So startups may contribute more to AI because they are not controlled. They are more free. So I don't know whether you understood what I pointed out, that the basically innovation flourishes when there is a total freedom to fail and fail repeatedly.
That's it for this conversation. I'll be back with another episode of Startup Fridays soon. Until then, have a great Friday and a wonderful weekend. I'm Hari Arakli. Thank you for listening.